Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Andrew, how are you?
Doing very well.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the Netflix vehicle, Last Chance U?
I have not seen it.
Oh.
I'm aware of it, but I haven't seen it.
You need to dig in.
Okay.
This is some of the best TV I have ever watched. And I'm wondering why it's never been done in soccer. Like, it's been done short form, like an hour documentary. But this is 8 parts. Season 4 of Last Chance U is 8 parts, an hour long each. And it's just so good. It is unbelievable.
Okay. I'm intrigued. And I'm not, you're really selling it.
And I'm not talking first team Juventus, which is just like propaganda guff, like terrible. And I'm not even talking Amazon Prime's Aren't We Great Manchester City or whatever it was called, which was actually had some interesting insights, but still was largely propaganda. This is so good. This is raw. It's gritty.
Wow. I think it should be done in podcast form. Like, this could be my, I have to put on a brilliant show today or I'm out. This is my last chance.
Wow. Yeah. Last chance pod.
Yeah.
You'd be gone. You'd be gone in the first round.
Speaking of shows that I think the other one of us might enjoy, have you heard of the show Years and Years?
Yes, Peter Rosenberg won't stop talking about it.
So I finally started watching
and?
It. I really do like it.
Oh.
It's where, I would say it's where This Is Us and Black Mirror meet.
Well, I want This Is Us and Black Mirror to meet at a cliff and for Black Mirror to push This Is Us off the cliff.
I say This Is Us because it follows kind of a semi-quirky family through
feelings and emotions and fires
through
and pregnancies,
like, through
and death and
through
cancer
where history is headed, kind of.
Okay.
It's interesting. And you are somebody who likes history, and I think you might be intrigued by like the way the show is done.
Do you know what's intriguing?
What?
This podcast.
Lot to get to. We're going to talk with Dermot Corrigan in just a couple of minutes. He is our guy who is based in Spain, who covers La Liga, who's been on this podcast many, many times, always has good insight. And we need to know what's happening with Gareth Bale because the situation has been ongoing and it's only seemingly getting weirder and weirder. So he obviously covers this stuff professionally. So we're going to get his take on all of it. Also, we're going to get into MLS because this was a really, really interesting weekend in the league. A lot to talk about there. What a game between the Galaxy and LAFC to start things off on Friday night, and things only got better seemingly after that. Big mailbag, big what to watch for. You were talking up your red card before the show as if the mics were already rolling, so I'm excited about what that will be.
It came to me in the early hours of this morning. It's very organic. Oh. Red card. It's my most organic red card since I freaked out at the guy over Panama taking the USA's place in the World Cup.
Hopefully it's better than your Maldini one.
You hated that.
It was so poor and so lazy. Also, actually, we have a 5 stars, 5 years on this podcast too, which I think people will enjoy.
Oh, it's a classic.
Yeah.
It might be the best thing we've ever done.
High production value,
yes.
A lot of thought and effort. I still think the rap battle is the best thing we've ever done.
I think I prefer this. Okay. All from your fetid mind.
So, yeah, stay tuned for that at the end of the pod as well. But let's start now, JJ, with what I guess feels like the top story of the day, and that's probably been the case for the past couple days, and that is the unfolding drama between Gareth Bale and Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid as a whole. At this moment, his status for where he'll be playing this season seems completely and utterly up in the air. And it's just such a, to me at least, you can tell me if I'm wrong in feeling this way. To me, it's still such a huge domino that we're waiting to fall. And I feel like there are some people who are maybe moving off of that opinion of Bale because
yes.
His name is being dragged through the mud. He's coming off of a season where he dealt with injuries, where his spot on the first team for Real Madrid was never really guaranteed. But I'm sorry, I can't help but look at this guy's pedigree, his age. He's still 30, so he still has, I'd say, three solid years left of his prime. I don't know. I view him as a guy who could go to almost any of the top clubs in the world and make them an immediate contender.
Do you?
For certainly for whatever they're going to do domestically. in their league, and maybe for a Champions League as well.
I think a lack of consistent starting time at Real Madrid over the last couple of seasons and the injuries have denuded that view. I honestly don't know.
Is he not playing for them consistently because of his injuries or because he's just not as good a player as what I believe he is in my head?
Some of it might be systems as well. Some of it might be trying to fit. I mean, certainly a lot of it was the glare from Ronaldo, trying to get Ronaldo and Bale in sync. I don't know, Andrew. He's been a bit of an afterthought, let's be honest. Even in the Champions, think of, contextualize this for a second. Even in the Champions League final where he scores one of the great Champions League final goals of all time, like, he's not a starter.
Came on as a sub and scored twice.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just my point. And you could be right. He could be still at the peak of his powers. But I don't know that because we're not seeing him. And he's been... Also, the noise surrounding Real Madrid about him is casting him as this remember him kind of role. And there are also... I mean, it'll be interesting to ask Dermot this question. Who else is interested? Like, who are we hearing
from? Up to this point, we're only hearing China, which just feels wrong. So unrealistic to me. Now, I just can't see that as a legitimate option.
Rob Stone tweeted yesterday, in as he is wont to do with his controversials, and he just tweeted that MLS clubs should be getting their pitches ready for Bale. And that would feel wrong, too.
How much of a pay cut is Gareth Bale really going to be willing to take?
A lot.
For that to even be on the table? Because... See what you want about.
Yeah, he'd have to end up on Michael Bradley money, which is just $6 million a year.
But it's a far cry from 17.
It's a lot. He's not going to want to eat that.
That's the only reason why MLS is like. I respect Rob Stone. He's great, but that's crazy talk to me. Like that is really crazy talk. Because say what you want about playing in China, you know, the one thing they'll do is pay these guys legitimate money to get them to go there. MLS, I feel like oftentimes doesn't feel like they need to adhere to that because what MLS sells to stars in Europe is come live the American lifestyle. So they feel like they don't need to overcompensate necessarily. Maybe that's arrogant, but I think it has worked on luring certain players over there to come live in America. China doesn't do that. They lure you with money. So MLS is not going to go to that kind of length to get him.
Can I go back to your previous point about is he still a player that could come into a team and just do the things that Gareth Bale has done and maybe be a huge threat in the team and transform the side? Mm-hmm. We've seen cameos that would suggest he can still do that. You know, I shouldn't just blanketly say his powers are denuded. Like I said, he is not what he was. I remember the Nations League game, and you can say, okay, it's the Republic of Ireland, but I remember him just burning players and coming in on his left foot and whacking it into the top corner, the things that we associate with Gareth Bale. I just want to test the theory at a top team. China probably is being talked about for the simple reason is that China can pay.
I really think that can be the only reason.
And I would very much doubt Gareth Bale wants to see out the last really good years of his career in China. No disrespect to China.
It's just interesting because his entire time at Real Madrid is like this big mind F to me. That like he's almost been treated as some sort of like glorified role player while he's been there. Because it's always been, regardless of how much money Florentino Perez signed him for, this has always been Ronaldo's team. And rightfully so. Ronaldo is a way better player.
Right.
But like you just said, he's had you just used the word cameo. Like, that's how we view him at Real Madrid. Like, he's just some cameo figure. But I went on the BBC because I was kind of testing that idea in my mind. Is that really all he is? Or is he more meaningful than that? Honestly, even I, who love Bale, was surprised by what the BBC had. They had a whole article basically saying, like, this guy is better than you remember him being at Real Madrid. Here's some of what they say. He's played 231 games for them, which felt like a big number. And in those 231 games, he scored 102 goals and added 65 assists to that. His minutes per goal rate was better than Raul's at Real Madrid. Raul. Zidane and Bale both played roughly the same number of games for the club, and yet Bale scored more than double the number of goals that Zinedine scored there.
Right.
And their assist tally was virtually identical.
Yeah.
And then, like we've talked about, by the way, they've won 14 trophies since Bale has arrived at Real Madrid. He's scored in two Champions League finals, including an extra time winner against Atletico Madrid, and like you said, one of the great Champions League final goals of all time. He also has an incredible winner in a Copa del Rey El Clasico against Barcelona.
It was an incredible goal.
So, like, he leaves. If he does leave, he leaves behind a legacy that I think is way brighter than whatever people are going to give him credit for. I don't know. Maybe I view him in some biased light because I just can't erase from my mind the things that I saw him do at Tottenham. But I don't know. I feel like the numbers back up the fact that he's been a really good player for Real Madrid. And I think really good is putting it a little bit lightly. Maybe his price tag was just always too high and he was never going to fully be able to live up to that. I know that, like, there's going to be Real Madrid fans who tweet me and say that, you know, you're just not watching enough. You don't see the times when he fails. I'm not saying he's been a perfect player for them, but I guess I'm just surprised with this, like I mentioned at the top of the show, this, like, dragging through the mud process that has gone on between really Bale's agent and the club.
The only thing I would say about the Bale versus Ronaldo comparisons in terms of them as players, which aren't really helpful in this argument right now, but they're fun to look at. Zidane was 28 or 29 when he signed for Real Madrid, whereas Bale gave Real Madrid the peak years, the center years of his career. I think it's worth pointing
all
out.
All right, that is fair too. Last bit on this, I did want to mention something about China before we get to Dermot. And Graham Hunter, like, this back and forth on whether or not he should go to China, you and I are both kind of united in saying he should not.
No.
Graham Hunter as well, I saw he was quoted in Sky Sports saying he should be playing in an elite football club and he should be doing so in order to stick Zinedine Zidane's words back down his throat. He has been an extraordinary British export. That's from Graham Hunter.
Who is a very, very balanced man, and that would be his genuine belief. This would not be Brit patriotism either. It would be his genuine feeling on the case.
It is true where if Bale goes to China, it is kind of like Zidane wins. Like, Bale will recede into just like the dark recesses of our mind, well, and he'll kind of be forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, we'd be talking about him, whatever happened to Solomon Rondon. Oh, and Gareth Bale. You know.
Right. I'll tell you what, let's continue this now with our man in Spain. Dermot Corrigan, of course, covers Spain and La Liga for ESPN FC, and he joins us now. Dermot, what's up, man? How you been?
Hey, pretty good. Pretty good, boiling away here, roasting in the Spanish sun, but can't complain. We're doing well. Plenty to talk about. Plenty to keep us interested.
Yeah, seriously. I guess let's start with what JJ and I have been talking about, and that's this entire kind of bizarre Gareth Bale situation that we feel like we need some, like, greater perspective on. First off, I guess with regards to Zidane, why is he so hell-bent, at least how it seems to us, why is he so hell-bent on seeing Bale go?
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I've been trying to kind of work through it myself. It looks like Zidane has kind of taken personally against Bale, that he's decided that he just needs to get Bale out of there. I don't think they've had a big falling out or anything. It's not that they've, you know, they're not really talking to each other, but it's the way things have developed over the last couple of years, where first Zidane wasn't sure how to get Bale into the team. He was leaving him out, playing Isco instead as an extra midfielder. Bale didn't take to that so well. And then there was, you know, probably would have happened last summer if Zidane hadn't have resigned at the end of last summer, something similar might have happened. You know, Bale had come out and said he was thinking of leaving, and now just the relationship between the two of them has just broken down. So they're kind of, They're two big egos, two big personalities, and two kind of quiet enough guys as well. Not guys who shout from the rooftops a lot, but they really don't like each other now. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, Dermot, I've been curious about this since he moved there. You know, we hear stories over here about, you know, the golf and how this is such a front to the Real Madrid fans, like Gareth Bale plays golf so much, and maybe that he hasn't learned the language so much, that he's a bit removed from the players. Is any of that factoring into Zidane's decision?
I don't think that Zidane cares too much what Bale does on his time off. Bale wants to play golf. I don't think Zidane would care about that. Or really, whether he speaks Spanish or not, it's not going to be a huge thing to Zidane. I think the language issue maybe is a thing between them, just in that, you know, neither speaks the other's language. And, you know, Zidane's Spanish is pretty good, but even last night he was, you know, kind of apologizing for if he'd been misunderstood for not being clear enough in Spanish, and Bale's Spanish wouldn't be, I think it's better than maybe people make out, or especially the Spanish people make out, but still. So they've never really been able to connect too well. And there is maybe runs against Bale that he doesn't have anybody fighting his case really at the Bernabeu, because you know, other players have fallen out of favor, like Isco maybe last season, and he would have a big constituency of pundits, of former players, of media people, former managers, everybody around Madrid who would stick up for him. Whereas Bale, because of the type of guy he is, you know, he's a quiet guy. He's not that open a person. He's not really into networking or making contacts, that type of thing around Madrid. He hasn't bothered with any of that, which is fair enough. It's just the type of character that he is. And if he was playing, you know, regularly and scoring lots of goals, it wouldn't matter. But because of how things have gone, because of the injuries, because, as I said, Zidane maybe tactically decided that he didn't need him in the team, nobody is fighting back against that. And Bale is pretty isolated at the moment with just, you know, Jonathan Barnett, who, you know, has been talking to CSBN FC and putting Bale's side of the argument maybe across, whereas Bale stays quiet behind, allows his agent to do the talking for him. But there's nobody in Spain who's really pushing Bale's case, and that has counted against him.
What about among his teammates? Like, you mentioned the pundits, maybe fans, but do any of his teammates have his back?
I think he gets on okay. Like, you know, there's stories about, you know, Sergio Ramos organizing the night out and Bale being one of the few players who didn't go along to that. Excuse me. But I don't think they hold it against him. He is, you know, as I said, he's a quiet guy. He's not life and soul of the party. But he is respected. You know, he gets on with Luka Modric. He's very good. There was talk that he'd been helping Eden Hazard settle in, that because, you know, obviously they spoke English together, that he'd been helping out there. I know that him and Toni Kroos speak English together, get on pretty well. You know, Modric has fully settled into the dressing room, talks in Spanish, talks to everybody. Bale has not reached that level, but I don't think he's disliked, or up until now anyway, I've not seen signs of him being actually disliked by his teammates.
So let's imagine this scenario, Dermot, that nothing happens, he's not moved on, he remains at the club, he wants to see out, I suppose, get paid, see out that contract. Does Zidane freeze him out? Does he end up playing in or training with the youth team? Does he end up on the beach? How do you see this playing out? Should he end up staying?
Yeah, it's you know, I don't think anybody wants that. Of all of the people involved, who I'd include Florentino Perez, the club president, as a really big player in this, nobody wants to see that. And in a way, it does come down, as much as it's a battle of wills between Zidane and Gareth Bale over what happens, there's also the battle of wills going on, as I see it, between Zidane and Florentino Perez, because Florentino has always supported Bale. He's been seen, or I wouldn't say always, but has often supported Bale. He was seen as a big Florentino signing, as somebody who Florentino put a lot of faith in and has supported a lot within the power structure at the Bernabeu. Zidane is now taking that on. I think Zidane feels empowered by the way in which he came back during his first spell as coach. Zidane was very, we used to say a lot, you know, I'm just the coach here. You know, you'd have to take that up with the president, would be his answer to a lot of transfer type questions. Whereas now he's been much more open. You know, I want to get Hazard. I want to get Paul Pogba if I can. So that's a big factor in what's going on at the moment. Whether Bale will be happy to just sit in the stands and take his, you know, 17 million euros after tax a year, I don't know. I don't think so. That's not the impression I would have from Bale, who is a very serious, professional, competitive type guy. So maybe they're all trying to hardball each other. Maybe there'll be a solution. The other thing is that coaches don't often last that long at Madrid. Zidane did very well in his first spell, but, you know, if they don't win anything next season, he'll come under pressure again. So maybe Bale's trying to play a long-term game, and difficult one at the moment, but that could happen.
Yeah, Dermot, the Bale side of this is a perspective that I'm really interested in, because, you know, it clearly seems the manager doesn't want him. There's questions about whether or not, you know, the Florentino Perez, we just talked about his teammates and whether or not he's fully integrated there. It just doesn't feel like it's a place where he would want to be, and yet he seems so steadfast in wanting to continue to play for Real Madrid. Is that for financial reasons, or is there more to it than that?
I think a part of it is that there's not so many options for him. Maybe if Manchester United had pushed really hard and said, you know, we'll match your wages that you're getting at Madrid or Bayern Munich or some other of Europe's biggest teams had made him a really interesting offer, maybe he would have, the situation would be different at the moment. But our information at ESPN FC is that none of the European clubs have even made a serious inquiry about Bale, that wow. they're put off by his wages, by his injury record as well, and by the fact that he turned 30 earlier this year. The idea of going to China has been floated as that's a country who would be able to pay or maybe match the wages that he has. Looks to me as if he's not interested in that one. If he had to choose, say, between, hypothetically speaking, between a return to one of the Premier League's biggest clubs and Madrid, well then, you know, it'd be a serious decision for him to make. But if it's choosing between fighting to try and get back into the situation at Madrid and going to China, then at the moment, you know, you can be proven wrong by these things, but at the moment it looks like he will stay and try and fight his way back in at Madrid.
Last one on Bale for you, Dermot. It's just interesting to me because Madrid have experienced so much success since Bale arrived. I don't know if some of that is down to coincidence, but a lot of that has certainly been his doing. He scored a lot of big goals at that club. So I just wonder sometimes, why does it feel like he's just never been truly accepted as like a true Real Madrid player?
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. You know, you look in his first year, he had that the amazing goal in the Copa del Rey final against Barcelona, Clasico, to basically win that. You know, big goals in Champions League finals, including one of the best goals ever in a Champions League final, scored in Clasicos. He scored a couple of crackers, one especially I remember from 25 yards at the Camp Nou to get a draw in La Liga as well. You know, being in Ronaldo's shadow is difficult for anybody, both physically on the pitch. You know, we saw sometimes Ronaldo wasn't happy when Bale didn't pass to him. This is going back a few years ago. Also off the pitch, just having to deal with that and, you know, where the PR resources go or who gets, you know, which opportunities to shine. If you're up against Ronaldo, you know, anybody's going to lose that. I'd also just think I said earlier about Bale's personality of not really being that open a guy or not a guy who goes out of his way to network and to make that type of links. And that nobody then at the club is fighting his corner. It's tough for him. I think he understandably kind of feels frustrated. You know, there's been a lot of social media links going around that stuff where comparing Bale's goals and assists and trophies won while playing for Madrid to Zidane's, and you know Bale scored more goals, won more trophies, but he hasn't got the recognition that he deserves from that. I think it's fair to say, and it's part of, he has to deal with it. It's part of life. It's not going to change. He's not going to become a darling of the Bernabeu at all at this stage.
Dermot, final one from me, and it's not on Bale, you'll be glad to hear. So Nabil Fekir joins Real Betis for what seemed like a cut-price deal. So just because Andrew here is a Spurs supporter, that means, right, that Giovanni Lo Celso is on his way to North London, correct?
It looks like it. The couple of things, as far as I know, there's a couple of things still have to fall into place, but could happen very soon. And Lo Celso is an excellent player. I have a bit of a soft spot for Real Betis myself, so watched a lot of their games last year, and technically excellent guy. He's a guy with a lot of personality, took a real leadership role in the team, even though he's young enough. He's 22, I think, maybe turned 23, and was on loan, scored some big goals, played a big role in Betis winning at both the Camp Nou and the Bernabeu last year. He's a guy who I think will fit pretty well into the Tottenham system as well. He works hard, even though he's a skillful guy and he's not the most physically imposing. He works hard, can follow tactical instructions as well. Even played as a false nine for a while last year because Betis had no other options. You know, didn't complain about that. Knuckled down and took the kicks that come with playing as a centre forward as well, even though he's not a big guy. So if I was a Spurs fan, I'd be super happy about that. You know, as somebody leaning towards Betis, excited about Fekir coming in as well because he looks a super, potentially super signing, assuming he's got over his injury issues. He could be another kind of another gem for Betis to polish and maybe be selling on to a bigger, richer club again in 12 months' time.
Well, that all sounds very good.
There
very
you go, Andrew. That's
you.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Well, hey, Dermot, this was great, man. Always enjoy catching up with you. I'm sure we'll be in touch as the summer rolls on. Thanks so much. Take care.
Cool. Cheers, guys. Talk to you soon.
Our thanks to Dermot. Got to say, I kind of liked hearing some of what he was saying there about Lo Celso.
Yeah. I remember some mailbag last season where we were talking about what Barcelona do and how you can stop them. And I looked at the Betis-Barcelona game where Betis won 3-2, I think it was. And Lo Celso was just outstanding in that game. I would be excited if I was you. I love, do you know what I loved most shows what a proper football man I am. When he said he gets stuck in, he's happy to play in any role.
I know.
There's something so endearing about players like that. And I'm not comparing Lo Celso's skill set and James Milner's, but guys who will plug in different positions and do roles, they are...
There will always be a place for you.
Yes, they are instantly likable.
Yeah. It is interesting, the summer that Tottenham are having right now, because, if they do walk away with Ndombele and Lo Celso, then it means Pochettino is going to end this summer getting his top two targets that he wanted when the summer began. And almost just as importantly...
keeping Christian Eriksen.
Eriksen, there has been... he wanted to go to Real Madrid. They weren't interested. And there hasn't been any interest from anyone else. And then by the same token, I read stories today that Toby Alderweireld now sounds like, whether he's happy about it or not, I don't know, but he sounds resigned to the fact that he'll be a member of Tottenham again for the season, for the upcoming season. So they're not losing anyone really. I know they lost Trippier, but I think they can live with that. I'm appreciative of what he did for the club while he was there, but they can afford to have lost him.
I don't think Danny Rose is going to go anywhere, and he may end up going somewhere, but right now he isn't going anywhere.
You're right. Fullback ultimately would be their question mark, but I don't know. I feel like they're having a summer. Again, this all needs to happen, and there is still time left in the window for guys to leave. But it all looks pretty good right now.
Tottenham is the Hotel California of the Premier League. You can check in any time, Andrew, but you may never leave.
I know. By the way, we don't talk much about the International Champions Cup, but what about this from the other day?
He's excellent in terms of his hold-up play. I can see him being there's an opportunity here.
Kane, what has he just done? Incredible! Oh! What a goal to win it! Szczesny's caught out. Harry Kane has scored the goal of this tournament. That is extraordinary.
There are not many moments that will make me stand up and yell during what is essentially, they can call it whatever they want. It's a preseason friendly, but that actually did it for me.
That was awesome from right the center circle. And what was funny about it was so unexpected that it caught the commentators in a mid-natter. They were just having a conversation. You know, what you want to do is you want to boil the spuds, right? And then you want to put them...
Yeah. That was a pretty cool moment. Let's move on now. Our thanks again to Dermot for joining us. We'll keep an eye on this Bale thing, because like I said, I think it's still a big...
I was half-joking when I said about Lo Celso, though, as well. I was saying, 1 + 1 = 2. Fekir is in, so he's there. But apparently...
Yeah, by the way, actually, real quick, you mentioned Fekir. What happened to his price tag?
Plummet.
Why?
Well, from what we heard last season, and again, I don't like...
Wasn't he being valued at like $50 million
last
summer?
Yeah. Liverpool, he's been the love interest of Liverpool fans for so long. Announce Fekir immediately! But from what we heard, there was a problem with the knee surgery that he had, and that Liverpool were, and they asked for a reduced price for him. And Leon were, nah.
No, I mean, when is a Premier League club getting a reduced price for a player from another country?
But obviously, Leon have resigned themselves to the fact, unless this is bonus and incentivized, and it may well be, this contract or this deal, they've decided to get rid now while they can, I guess.
I saw that number. I was like,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So there you go. Let's bring it back now across the Atlantic Ocean, back to MLS. JJ, this was a pretty riveting weekend. It started off so brightly with the LAFC.
That was awesome.
What a great game. We can get into the game in any way you want, but I figure the best avenue in is this whole Vela versus Zlatan debate. I wonder if Zlatan ever pictured a moment like when he was, scoring goals at PSG or wherever. It was like, there's going to be a day when everyone's wondering if I'm better than Carlos Vela.
There's an ex-Arsenal. There's an Arsenal reject you're going to have to compare yourself to.
Yeah. I know there's obviously so much more to it than this, but just so people have like the base knowledge here, Vela has 21 goals and 12 assists in 20 games this season. Zlatan has 16 goals and 3 assists in 16 games this season.
Look, if all things are equal and I'm building a team and you're asking me, am I taking 29-year-old assist machine Carlos Vela over one-dimensional in terms of the way you have to play to him, Zlatan, then I'm going to go with Vea. But Zlatan is a force of nature. He is a brilliant player. Let's be honest, I like Jonathan Dos Santos. And that's it. Like, that LA Galaxy team is bang average. Like, it's less than bang average in my view. And Taylor Twellman made a great point. they are super one-dimensional. But when your dimension is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, it just opens up everything else.
Yeah.
Now, I will give credit to the LA Galaxy midfield, and so did Bob Bradley. They pressed. They never gave the LAFC midfield a chance to settle and get the ball to Vea. Vea had to come deep to get it, and when he turned, he had so much of the pitch in front of him, he couldn't be impactful. He still got two goals, mind you. It's worth noting. But at the same time, you know, Zlatan just brings this unbelievable dimension. He bullies defenders. Like, LAFC were running scared. It was, I'm not going to use the word cowardly, that's not right, but they were so scared of him. So scared. To the point where all basics of defending were forgotten. That first goal is an amazing goal. It is a brilliant goal. But it's also a huge defensive breakdown. You have the fullback and the other centre-back running to Zlatan to double-team him because they're afraid. And he flicks it over their head. And suddenly there's this wide gap. Walker Zimmerman is in nowhere land, hasn't read it, expects them to deal with it. And the next thing's in the back of the net. You should watch Walker Zimmerman's reactions to the goal going in.
Yeah. It's, part of me, though, commiserates with him in his, like, expectance that they'll handle this.
Right, yeah. They did not.
No, they really didn't.
Diving in on Zlatan. If you're a 30-year-old Zlatan, and he was about, I'll say, 30 yards from goal in that point, you're a 38-year-old Zlatan, 30 yards from goal. You don't need to dive in. Just keep your shape. Let him have it. He's got to go long. He's not going to beat you with pace. There was one time in the second half where he tried to jink past someone. And it's like, figure this guy out. If you dive in, he is going to mug you. He is a street footballer. He's too skillful.
He's skillful and he's still so strong, which unfortunately Beast. Was kind of on display for the wrong reasons when he like dented El Munir's skull.
Right, but even look at the flick on where he's for his third goal. Look at that. So it's a long ball. Now he gets his like back on it or whatever, but the defender is nowhere to be seen. He's monstered out of it, and the ball breaks to him again. And suddenly there's no one close to him.
Yeah,
like there was this thing where LA, someone on Instagram, a listener of ours, contacted me and said, "Why aren't they man marking him?" I'm like, "They're afraid to. They're afraid to get too close. They get too close. He skips. He flicks it over their head. They stay zonally. He's got too much space." Did not know how to handle him.
Yeah. Here's Steve Nicol, by the way, on the Zlatan Vela debate.
You go around football players in football locker rooms, and when we talk about who's the best player, it comes down to when it matters. Mm. It's okay for Vela to score 5 or 6 goals against Cincinnati and make the stats look great. Mm. But when it matters, that's when you want the guy who's the best beside you. Mm. And when it mattered last night, guess what happened? Mm. Not only did he score a hat-trick, but he scored an incredible goal.
That's all fair, but I do think that
some of that is not fully fair.
No, it's not.
Vela is more than just a guy who scores a lot of goals on bad teams.
Vela is a brilliant footballer, and look, like I said, I would still take him at 29 over Zlatan at this age, but that doesn't change Zlatan's skill set or what he's able to do in a game. What I would be saying is that the rest of his team let him down. That midfield was overran. Like, Vea isn't going to do it all on his own. It's just not going to happen. So,
yeah, I saw this from, I think it was Bobby Warshaw at MLSsoccer.com, who was talking about LAFC and what a loss like this means. And he said this. He said, for LAFC, their task is clear, as shown in the U.S. Open Cup loss to Portland and Friday's loss to the Galaxy. Teams are going to try to make it ugly against them. Do they try to find the football? Or do they take the route of 2018 Atlanta and accept they need to suck it up and play ugly as well? I do think, I don't want to over-exaggerate what this loss was for LAFC.
Psychological blow.
But I do kind of wonder if we're now reaching the stage of the season where, okay, they've proven that they can beat up on a lot of MLS. But it's not a lot of MLS that they have to worry about. Ultimately, this is now a title or bust season for LAFC. Anything short of that will be a disappointment with how good they've been. So they don't have to worry about a lot of those teams anymore. They have to worry about the best of the best in this league. And those teams like the Galaxy, who clogged up the middle and wouldn't give Vela space to run through the middle, they're pushing things out wide, and LAFC didn't really want to play that way.
No.
You know, teams are going to do that. And like Bobby Warshaw says, they're going to muck it up against LAFC as well, now try to make it difficult for them to play the kind of like free-flowing football that they want to play.
And it was worrying when Bob Bradley just said our intensity wasn't there. Bob, it's a derby.
How's that possible?
Come on.
Sometimes I think coaches just say things. They're just like they're programmed to say certain lines. I don't think they even understand like the repercussions of a line.
I mean, Bradley
like that.
Is a fairly, you know, he plays his...
Unless it's a message to his team saying like...
He wears his heart in his sleeve, so yeah. I mean...
Yeah, I don't know. So I just wonder now if LAFC are at some kind of crossroads where, like, are they going to have to change the way they play?
I don't think so. I don't think... That would be a panic. That would be a real panic. I would say if he feels as if that when he goes up against these teams, it's going to be a battle, then he's got to cut his cloth to suit his measure in those games. But... they're going to cut through most teams in this league. Yeah. It's just like you said, you've got to be better prepared for the big ties.
Yeah, one thing I did like about this game, not necessarily, I don't want to see guys getting hurt. I don't mean it like that. But in a rivalry game, like this had all the physicality of two teams that genuinely don't like each other.
This is now the best rivalry in MLS in my view. And I know there's people, Portland, Seattle, I know they'll talk about that. The New York rivalry, I've been at the Derby there last weekend. There's nothing, it's not in the same ballpark as what's going on in Los Angeles right now, and that's good to see.
Yeah. So, what else stood out to you from this past weekend?
I mean, Houston going into Toronto and Lauren Simon's performance at centre back was, I mean, every single goal, Andrew. The first goal was, you know, on, and again, I don't want to be derogatory, he's a good pro, but you know, on PlayStation, when you're trying to get the circle on your player that make that player, make a certain player be active. And instead of doing that, he becomes active quickly and then shoots out of position. Like he makes a run on FIFA that is our Pro Evo. Like, I didn't want you to go there. And right. There's a massive gap opens up. The first goal for Tommy McNamara was that. The last goal.
Manotas?
Ah, come on. And Manotas,
do me a favor.
Manotas is a good player. This was Keystone Cops. This was guys running into each other. Somebody in the middle of that move stood on Lauren Simon's toe and he starts hobbling. It was shameful from Toronto.
You need to do me one favor though. You, by the way, you have a lot of proper football man in you. You do.
Yeah.
Do me this one favor. You're right. The defending, it was MLS defending at its absolute worst.
However,
you can't leave talking about that goal without giving that guy some credit for scoring
he's one of the great goals. It was great persistence.
Like, you would think...
But it was great persistence against Larry Moe and Curley.
Come on, though. Even by accident, there were so many Toronto FC defenders around Manotas there that you would have thought one of them by accident would have put him off the ball. For him to have at least enough self
by
enough
accident,
control,
they were all involved in their own calamities.
To me...
Well, it was the worst I've ever seen. And I've coached... bad teams.
What a goal.
Bad wreck
teams. I loved the goal, and I thought Manotas was brilliant.
All right.
Let's see. I had a couple things I wanted to mention. Just one thing real quickly here. I feel like Philadelphia Union fans, for however good the Union have been so far this season, and by the way, they've been really good.
We had an email from Shafay.
Oh, really?
Why aren't we talking about the Union more?
Well, I hadn't seen that email, and here I am leading this section with the Union.
So take that.
By the way, why wouldn't he just text me? What's his problem?
His email was really nice.
It's one of my closest friends.
It was a nice email.
I don't want to hear it. I don't care for it. And I'm not. I feel like he should have come to me personally.
I left it out when I knew you'd talk about them. So,
yeah, I wanted to talk about them because for however good the Union have been this season, and they're leading the Eastern Conference, and it's been a really fun, kind of unexpectedly fun season for them. There have still been questions over the signing of Marco Fabian, and. You know, is he going to be the player that they thought he would be? And there's been flashes of it.
It's Fabian.
That's right, actually. I should know from the commercial with the poor man Seth Rogen. but, like, there has not been a flash quite that we've seen from him like the one we saw Saturday night. This goal was so great.
The veteran Reduyan in off the left foot, played it back, right off the training ground. Wagner slides it. Shot taken. Fabian, what a goal!
I mean, they say, you talk about right off the training ground, that was brilliant. And it was beautiful from Fabian. And his entire first half, I thought he was probably the best player out there. I don't know, the Union, like, I keep waiting for that moment when it starts to unravel. And I feel like that's just, I just don't know that that's going to happen. Like, I really feel like this is a pretty complete team. Now, I know This was their first shutout, I think, since May 18th. So maybe there are still problems in the back. I don't know. Maybe some of that was Andre Blake being away on international duty for part of that time. But I feel like they're kind of hitting that point in the season now where maybe you need to really start thinking that they're as good as what they've shown.
I'm just watching this goal. That was with the outside of his boot.
And it's just like rising, even as it hits the back of the net. It's just like...
It was perfect.
It's one of those moments, not to be like all flowery soccer guy, but sometimes you get these moments.
Not
where
to be
like,
me, is it?
But you do get these moments when you're like, yeah, that's why they call it the beautiful game. Like you see it every once in a while. I really thought that goal was one of those moments.
But don't ever say the beautiful game. We're retiring that phrase. Too many awful people use it.
That's nice. So you've waited for the first time that I ever decided to use it to make fun of it. Like you've never once, in all the times you've heard people say it, you've never made a comment about it.
That's why we love the beautiful game.
My other thing from this weekend was what you mentioned, Seattle and Portland. That was also a really fun game of two teams that clearly have no use for one another with like those great scenes at the end when Roman Torres is basically inviting everyone to come fight him in the tunnel underneath the stadium.
I'll tell you, he could get through at least 1,000 people before someone really... He's a stocky guy.
For me, the big takeaway in this one was Brian Fernandez, who has come on as a midseason acquisition, as a DP signing from back in May, and he immediately looks like one of the best players in the league. He has 8 goals in league play since he joined Portland, and... I feel like this is now another case of a South American player coming into MLS and immediately exerting himself as one of the best players in the league, and that continues to be a good thing, I believe. So, yeah, good for him. Here's what he said after the game, Fernandez. He said, to come to another stadium, especially in a big rivalry like this, and be able to score and quiet people, it's beautiful. I like that attitude.
Quiet people. Well, it is about shutting. There's nothing like it. The pocket of your away fans explodes and everything else is silent.
And they did have a great, as they always do, but there was a great traveling section of Portland fans there. That was a fun game. I don't know. Like, fighting in sports isn't good. I know that, but I just kind of like the ends of these games when it's just, like, the emotion is still so raw and there's just chaos out there.
It sounds as if good angel Andy is fighting with evil devil Andy.
Kind of. Yeah. So that is about it from MLS. We'll have a little bit in what to watch for. I'll tell you what, we'll take a very quick break. I'm so excited for our 5 stars, 5 years, JJ.
Me too. Before we take the break, can everyone just go and read Andrew Corsello's article on ESPN FC with the aforementioned Zlatan, which gets into some things we just don't have time to touch on. But it's very good. It's very, very good. And I'm sure the league office are absolutely delighted with it, too.
He's propped himself above the league. He believes he's bigger than, not the team, JJ. He's bigger than the league.
That's what he believes.
I guess you could debate whether or not it's true.
Oh, stop.
I'm
sidetracking things here. Let's go to the break.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. And back now on Caught Offside. JJ, are we going to be doing Help a Fan again?
We have not decided.
If there's you have always been the one championing it.
If there's a demand for it, we could do it and we could answer via emails, but I think doing a Help a Fan show would drag us.
Well, here's the thing. I'll put it out there right now. So let's just decide right here and now that we'll do it.
Okay.
I feel like it's become
a thing.
A staple of the show leading up to the Premier League season. So I say we have to do it.
And do we do it as an iTunes review, leave your email, and then we email them their team?
Bingo.
Okay.
In your... we will put up on our Twitter page, we will pin to the top of it our Help a Fan questions. We have 10 questions that typically don't have anything to really do with soccer. If you don't have a Premier League team that you currently root for, you can look at them, you fill them out, and you send them back to us. And then we will go through your responses, and based on the nature of those responses, we will customize whatever team best suits you.
It's a soccer Rorschach test.
Right. In the past, we have done them as a podcast. It's excruciating. No one wants it except the people who filled out their sheets. So this year, as an iTunes review, leave your responses to our questionnaire. And in the iTunes review, leave... I would say either, what do you think, JJ? Leave your either a Twitter handle or some way for us to get in touch with you, that so we don't have to do this as a podcast, because we're not. We can't do it. We can't do it anymore.
Yeah, no, we just don't have the bandwidth to do it. It's quite an undertaking. Last year we must have gone through about 300. It must have been.
All right, mailbag.
Yes, mail BZ. CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com, @SoccerPod, @CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram. NPSL story from Josh Deering. My name is Josh Deering. I've interacted with the podcast a couple of times. I had a friend tell me a crazy NPSL story last night that I wanted to pass along. This is a good one, Andrew. He's interning for Ann Arbor FC this summer and works all their home games. They made the playoffs and got to host the Rochester Lancers on Tuesday, July 16th. Ann Arbor Stadium doesn't have lights, so they play all their home games at 6 o'clock. Rochester asked for the start time to be moved back so they had more time to get to the stadium, and the teams agreed on a 6:30 kickoff. Ann Arbor booked a field 30 minutes away in case they needed to move indoors for some reason. Rochester brought 13 players to the game, including 50-year-old manager Doug Miller, who subbed in for about 10 minutes in the second half. It gets better, though. It was raining, but no one expected any lightning. So, of course, there were two different lightning strikes that caused delays. The second delay pushed the start of the second half back with the game tied 0-0. At this point, they're running out of light, but start the second half in the hope that someone would score and they could end the game when it got too dark. No one did. They called it after about 70 minutes and no one can decide what to do next. My friend said Rochester refused to move to the indoor location or stay overnight and finish the next day, which is what the league suggested. Rochester leaves on their bus and everyone goes home without any idea of what's happening next or who won. The semi-finals are on Friday, July 19th, so they need to figure this out. The league decides they're going to determine the game via coin flip, then change their minds and announce it will pick up in Erie, Pennsylvania on Thursday, July 18th. Both teams score and the game goes to extra time. Rochester eventually wins on penalties. So they're driving all the way back to Detroit for the semis after going from Ann Arbor back to Rochester and then to Erie. I was just curious if you have ever heard of anything like this before.
No.
No.
Of course not.
Like, there's nothing as mad as this. I've heard mad stuff. Like when Scotland went to play Estonia in a World Cup qualifier for France 98. I think Craig Burley was on the team. And there was a row with the Estonian FA over floodlights. So the game had to be, the floodlights were not good enough or something. And the game was played at 3 o'clock. Estonia decided we're not showing up. So Scotland lined out in full kit, did the national anthem, scored a goal, ran the goal into an empty net and then went off the field.
Did the clock continue to tick for night? Like, the remainder of the game, or was it?
The referee blew for full time.
Okay, good.
Actually, I don't think they even ran the ball into the net. I think they tipped off. The referee blew for full time. That was it. And that's technically a 3-0.
Yeah, forfeit.
Marcus Paulo Serra. I can't speak for every Brazilian fan out there, but I did not miss Neymar at this year's Copa America. As talented as he is, there was always something about him that did not sit right with me, but always had a hard time explaining on what it was. Until I believe it was Alejandro Moreno who said at the end of Brazil versus Peru that Neymar is a sideshow on and off the pitch and not part of the show. With the performance Everton had at the Copa America, and if his form continues, I think Neymar has lost his position and, from my perspective, has lost the support of Brazilian fans. Wow. I do love the guy and wish the best for him and hope he can regain his form. The Last Nate. This was from Instagrams. The kids love Instagram.
What's our Instagram?
Caught Offside ESPN.
There you go.
Yeah, and the kids love it. They're all over it, you know, with the Justin Biebers and, you know, everything that's hip and cool. The Last Nate. I have to say that interview with John Barnes, which I'm listening to now, is absolutely fantastic. We got a lot of great feedback on the Barnes interview.
He was awesome.
He was. He really was. It was nothing to do with us.
No, like really, you wind him up and let him go on any topic and he's great.
Someone asked, could we have him on as a regular spot? And I said, we don't have the budget for that.
Or for anything.
Asterisk, we don't have the budget for anything. I bought a new pencil though, I'm going to try and caught offside pencil.
You going to expense that?
Yep.
Okay.
Don't veto me. Brandon Yawn, finally. Hey, Andrew and JJ, during the MLS preview pod this season, one of you mentioned that the San Jose Earthquakes would be the most improved team this year. Who was that, Andrew?
It was you.
And you were right. JJ was right. After a rough start to the season with 4 straight losses, they've won 9 times, drew 4 and lost 3, and now sitting at 4th in the Western Conference. What are your thoughts on this massive improvement, and do they have a shot at making it deep in the playoffs? I'm going to say what I think of this massive improvement comes down to the way that they play and that some teams are struggling to figure it out. But also, I'll put it down to this. Jake Pisani wrote this for the Quakes website, and it is something we noted in preseason. As a major part of preseason, the Earthquakes spent more than 2 weeks in Cancun, Mexico, largely focusing on stamina and conditioning. In fact, the club's training regimen on certain days would not include a soccer ball at all. That is utterly old school.
It's like Hoosiers.
Yeah. Do you know what's even more old school? Man-for-man marking. Almeida has them man-for-man marking at every area. Now, in the first four games, that did not work out well. But since then, they've come up against teams that obviously in the 1v1 battles, they're winning the majority of those battles and they're winning the game. But that is, most teams operate a mixture of a zonal and man-for-man system. But to go completely man-for-man is, I gotta say it, give Almeida a comb-over. Give him a sheepskin jacket, give him lots of rings, a medallion, give him sunshades and a London accent. He is a proper football man.
Wow, there you have it. Let's see, we move on now to what to watch for, JJ. Wolves season begins on Thursday.
Yes.
How about that?
And do you know who they're playing?
Crusaders FC.
Yes, Crusaders.
This is Europa League qualifying, first leg. Thursday at 2:45.
Isn't Crusaders are a very old Northern Irish team. Mm-hmm. But isn't it the most American name you could think of? What do we call ourselves? The Crusaders.
And yet I can't think of a American team that has that name. Am I just drawing a total blank?
Probably a college team, I would think. Division II football, I'm thinking.
Maybe I'm drawing a total blank on an obvious one.
But yeah. You'd expect Wolves to cruise through that tie.
Yes, yeah, you really would. Let's see, MLS, Friday night, 10 o'clock, another good one. Another good Friday night game to start your MLS weekend. LAFC in action again against Atlanta United FC.
Man, it's coming thick and fast. This is an important game, not because it's a big matchup between two potential rivals for MLS Cup, but this is a big game because LAFC need to banish the memory of what happened in the derby quickly. Mm-hmm. And usually you like a little gimme. And they're not getting that.
Well, at least it's at home, so that will help them, I would think, somewhat. One thing for Atlanta United FC is Pity Martinez is starting to round into form. He's coming off what was probably his best performance so far since coming to Atlanta, because that move has not, up to this point, has not gone as they had hoped.
And he has not looked happy there, but that was not the case at the weekend.
I feel like Atlanta we could do a bit of a deeper dive on and talk to somebody from there, because I wonder how much of this is Tata Martino having left that club. Like, I feel like there was this thought that...
You're already piling on Frank.
Yeah. If you want to call it that, sure. Because I just kind of felt like there was this thought with Atlanta where Martino was just not going to get the kind of credit that maybe he deserved because they just appeared to be so talented. And I know they lost Almiron, and that's a tough thing for Frank to have coped with as well. But I don't know. I do wonder if some of this is maybe scheme-oriented and Martino is missed. That's not a crazy sentiment. Saturday, 10:30, some good Western Conference action this weekend. Portland and LA Galaxy. So both LA teams bounce back with difficult games this coming weekend, which both should be fun. NWSL, JJ, Wednesday, midweek action, 10:30 p.m., Portland Thorns and Houston Dash. Portland played out a wild 2-2 draw against Utah over the weekend. Christine Sinclair had a great volley for Portland.
That was brilliant.
And then, of course, Kristen Press. We were only just talking about how when she scores a goal, it's a great goal. Like, she doesn't have any little, like, nothing tap-ins. She only has great goals. Kristen Press, with Utah trailing 1-0, she did this.
Press, near side. 1v1 goes through the legs. Press, shot, and that one finds the back of the net for the Utah Royals here in the 43rd minute. Welcome back to the NWSL, Kristen Press.
Yes, welcome back indeed.
Welcome back with a Meg.
Yep.
In the penalty box and a goal.
And then still from a really difficult angle. Even if the Meg never happened, it was always going to be a tough goal to score from the angle that she was coming from. But this is what she does. She's a professional, great goal scorer.
She is, and I'm glad she got over the hangover that I witnessed at the parade.
things in that game remained 1-1 until another familiar name, Lindsay Horan, scored like a really weird goal off a Megan Klingenberg long free kick late in the game, 87th minute. And Horan was hurt on the play. It looked like as she was kind of like going through her follow through on the shot, she sort of got kicked in the ankle. She was down for a while. Looked like Portland was going to get out of there with the 3 points. However, in the 90th minute, Rachel Corsi equalized on a really nice goal as well. So it does end 2-2. However, Portland do still go top of the table, thanks in part to North Carolina losing 2-1 to Chicago.
Which I will talk a bit more about in my Woman of the Match.
Okay, well, I will say that Sunday, our other game, what to watch for, Sunday, 4 o'clock, Reign FC and Chicago Red Stars.
But
I'll leave that to you, JJ. Before we get now to the red cards and Man of the Match, I do want to tell you, my friend, about Hims, one of our favorite products on this show. I mean, you've been bald for years, but you've covered it up nicely with that wig. But the fact that I can still tell it's a wig says all you need to know about why you need to explore Hims. 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35. Once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. The best way to prevent more hair loss is to do something about it while you still have some. It's time to get a handle on those precious locks. So I ask you this. Do you want a bald spot to pop up on or your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? Here's your solution. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Now, thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. No more awkward in-person doctor visits or long pharmacy lines. 4hims connects you to real doctors online, which could save you hours. It's completely confidential and discreet. Get the hair loss treatment everyone is talking about. It was featured in GQ, Men's Health, Esquire, Playboy, to name a few. So here's the deal. Order now. Listeners to this podcast can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. See the full website for details and safety information. This could cost you hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. But all you have to do is go to 4hims.com/offside. That's forhims.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside.
Awesome.
It's just that simple.
So where are we doing the 5 stars for 5 years?
At the end. Don't you worry.
All right.
Let's do this first.
It's such a good
red
one.
Card.
I know.
I want people to get to it.
Can I give my red card first?
You may.
All right. I give my red card to the Liverpool-Sevilla ICC match at Fenway Park. I know once you start.
It wasn't an ICC game.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was just a regular preseason
game. Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah, that's right. It's part of their, their Western Union Tour?
Our Western Union Tour. The Western Union Cup, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
It's not called that.
Well, at any rate, I assume all preseason friendlies are in ICC, even if, like, I don't care who's playing in them. I feel like Wolves Crusaders FC on Thursday is actually an ICC.
How dare you speak about Crusaders like that?
Now, I know once you start playing, you sometimes lose sight of whether a game is important or not. You're just out there playing. You're trying to make a name for yourself, trying to impress your manager. But that doesn't change the fact that what we saw from Sevilla in their match against Liverpool at Fenway Park, it was just kind of weird. You had Ever Banega elbowing Harry Wilson after already having been booked for a heavy challenge against Harry Wilson earlier in the match. You had Diego Carlos's rough challenge on Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. And then perhaps most troubling was Joris Gnagnon's kickout at Yasser Larroussi, in which Larroussi had to be stretchered off and was seen on crutches after the game. Here was a clearly unhappy Jurgen Klopp talking about some of this afterwards.
Early in the season, to create headlines with saying the things I think about that situation. Let me say how the situation is with Yasser. Looks like he was lucky. But, of course, how it always is with these things, we have to wait a little bit. He couldn't keep on playing, so that's the first not so good sign. But in the dressing room, it was okay. Similar, it looks to Harry. Harry got a knock on his jaw. And a finger in his eye. Oh, not too cool.
Klopp, he did as good a job restraining himself there as I think he could have, because you could see him like kind of getting into it a little bit with Sevilla coaches at the end of the first half.
I think there's just a general sense amongst professionals that you don't treat these games with the kind of abandon that Sevilla did.
Yeah. So ultimately, I mean, like I said, not all games are created equal.
No.
I think that's kind of what we have to know. Committing dangerous, and I think more importantly, just kind of unnecessary challenges in a preseason friendly. It just felt kind of wrong to me, so I went with that for my red card.
Yeah, thank you for doing that. Save me doing it. Andrew, this came to me this morning. My red card goes to the modern football fan. Not all of them, but some of them. Quite a lot of them, actually. So I woke this morning and I was doing a few things and I was thinking about this podcast. So I had a quick look at our iTunes reviews. All good, except for a 1-star review.
Oh, I don't want to. I can't. Can I leave the room? Because
no,
this will ruin my day.
It won't. So it's not so much that it was a 1-star review, because we've had funny ones before which says brilliant podcast and then 1-star just because we've asked for 5, which is fine.
Well, that's not cool.
The headline for this one is, the title is, Another Manchester United Hater. And hater is in block capitals.
Yeah.
Thumbs down. Goldbridge is a tool and should not be and should not be the voice of Manchester United. Apart from the obvious 1-star, what really got me was the hater in all caps, of course. As if discussing negative aspects to United's preseason makes us hate. And also, why are you talking like a 15-year-old Valley girl? You're just a hater. But it's that same mentality that has moron fans booing Ashley Young on preseason tour in Singapore. Again.
Oh, so you're doubling down.
Oh, yeah. I'm moving on with this. It's not just United fans. I will broaden this out. Oh. Again, some fan tried to twitsplain me that they weren't booing Young as a person or a player. Merely, they were booing the lack of transfer activity. Like, as if Ashley Young is Ed Woodward. This is the footballing version of, they weren't booing you, they were saying boo earns.
Smithies, are they booing me?
No, they're saying boo earns.
Are you saying boo or boo-earns?
I always love Mr. Burns' need to stand up and ask them directly. That is genius.
It's so good. And then there's Hans Molman going, I was saying boo-earns. And then I started thinking about some of the stuff I saw on Twitter yesterday in the wake of the Las Vegas district attorney deciding not to prosecute Cristiano Ronaldo over a decade-old accusation of sexual assault. Some accredited journalists were tweeting about what this means and the various aspects and sensitivities of the whole issue. Then come barreling into their mentions are Twitter accounts with CR7 and Ronaldo in the handles. All experienced lawyers too, by the sound of it. You know, everyone that was in there, they knew why Ronaldo was absolutely innocent and that this was just a facade, a charade.
Right.
All these lawyers. Verbally abusing, owning, obfuscating on an utterly grave matter, all in the name of a footballer that you like. From football fans who cannot let Linda Pizzuto Henry, wife of FSG owner John Henry, tweet about anything without screaming, announce Fekir! I'm glad that's gone now. Or some other player. To the Manchester City fans who leap to the defence of their billionaire royal family owner over any question that's posed about human rights or financial fair play. What is going on with these people? I mean, they don't obviously represent all football fans, but it does seem like a lot sometimes. Who are these people? When did football fans become like this?
So here's my only issue with everything you said there. I believe that that is not something exclusive to modern football fans. I just believe that modern football fans have more avenues to voice it. This is a thing that has always existed.
I think Twitter behavior, social media behavior, is now manifesting itself in real life. In the case of the Singapore booing, what are these people? Like, what accounts are they following with that? Like, how is Ashley Young the pariah in this?
Again, you're right. But booing a player who doesn't necessarily deserve those boos has been a thing that has always gone on.
Preseason friendlies are generally like joy fests. They're just, you know, here we are all together, fans of this team we rarely get to see in a foreign country, and we're singing songs. Booing Ashley Young is coming from somewhere. Look, it's coming from somewhere.
Fans gonna fan. This is what they do.
By the
this
way,
this is what they do. Yeah.
I guess that review was because we said we'd have Goldbridge on the pod.
Well, I talked about how I view him. Like, he's the Manchester United fan that I follow on Twitter. So when he's irate about stuff, to me, that's a glimpse into how they're feeling. Maybe that's wrong, but I love him, and I'm not going to change.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
JJ, my Man of the Match goes to the New England Revolution. A few months ago, I made them my red card because they were so objectionably bad. They were showing such lack of confidence in front of goal. Remember, they had gone a month and a half without a striker scoring a goal for them. I harpooned them. I lambasted them. I tore into them.
Didn't they go 6 years without a completed pass?
So now that they are unbeaten in their last 10, I felt compelled to do the right thing and make them my man of the match. First and foremost, I want to give Bruce Arena some love because that is a thing that hasn't really happened much in the past couple of years.
It's a year since we did our interview.
Of the 10 games unbeaten that they've gone, Arena has presided over 9 of them. Amazingly, they've now worked their way back into being in the playoffs if the season were to end today, and only 2 points back of 4th place NYCFC. The standout player who's really flown under the radar across much of the league has been Carlos Gil. In their last 6 games, he's got 3 goals and 6 assists, including goals in their last 3 straight. Really, there's honestly, a lot of guys are worth mentioning from them right now. Teal Bunbury's got 5 goals in his last 7 games. Also, the addition of Gustavo Bo and the lift that he has brought to this team. His debut goal was one of the goals of the season that he scored off of that corner kick. So, look, I was very hard on New England earlier in the season when things were going badly. It would only be right of me to applaud them now when they seem like they have righted the ship, and Bruce Arena deserves, honestly, a lot of credit for that.
So, it's amazing.
Man of the match.
Experienced manager comes in and does good job. Totally inexperienced manager fails in that job.
Yep. All right. And we're not saying Brad Friedel doesn't deserve another shot at management.
No, he should never manage again.
But, you know.
Obviously, well, he should.
But, you know, Bruce Arena is a legend. That's something that can get forgotten at times, and I think he's
30 years of experience plus.
Not that he owes it to anyone, but he is, for all intents and purposes, whether it's intentional, he's reproving it to a lot of people that had kind of lost faith in him.
Well, Andrew, I have nothing to prove.
And he should feel that way. I mean, he's got an incredible resume. He doesn't have anything to prove. But there's going to be a lot of people out there who hate him for what happened in 2017. And so, you know, I kind of applaud him for what's going on right now.
My man of the match, it's a woman of the match, actually. So there was a lot of positives to come out of the Chicago Red Stars defeating the North Carolina Courage 2-1 at the weekend. Morgan Bryan told Sarah Spain of ESPN, "It's a movement. Women are a force and we're creating a movement." She was talking about the league. She was talking about the record attendance. 17,388 people turned up. That was absolutely great. That's part of it. The second part is Sam Kerr for me. I'm breaking down this goal that she scored, which turned out to be the winner. Andrew, she is as slippery as an eel, and she creates chances where there are none and where there should be none. This is how valuable she is. So just before we play the audio of the goal, it's a mistake by Dalkamper. Okay, the ball runs across her foot.
Yeah, I don't know what happened
there. Yeah, she doesn't really make mistakes, but this was one. And it's fine because Erceg is covering. There should be no problem. But Kerr turns in a kind of a nonchalant fashion, which invites Erceg to make a tattle. And before it's too late, boom, nutmegged, skips by and slid under the goalkeeper. Here's how it sounded.
Chaos, brilliance, drama. That's what you get. Kerr can bring all of that and then some. Sam Kerr holding on for a save! No one will count!
Like,
great goal.
I still think that Erceg should have done better, but it's Sam Kerr. And
why don't you lack this gene that allows you to just enjoy a great player scoring a great goal? Find fault. And yes, oftentimes a goal is scored because somebody else screwed up. But like, I don't know, take some appreciation of a great player having a great moment.
It's growing up with Alan Hansen, who was the best defender of his era, being a pundit on TV for like 20 years. And he always break down. He's terrible defending now.
Ugh, it's just like, I don't know.
That's where it comes from.
A lot of proper football.
Anyway, Sam Kerr and everyone who showed up to the game at the weekend. That was awesome.
Good stuff. Before we get out, we do have 5 stars, 5 years.
I'm excited. I'm really excited.
This was following El Clasico.
In April 2017, I believe.
Yeah, an amazing the year Real Madrid won the league.
My favorite El Clasico game.
But Barcelona won this game in incredibly dramatic fashion. And Ray Hudson was just, he basically, even by his own standards, it felt like he really lost sight of himself that day. so we came back in and played a game which I think will be explained in the clip here. But we played a game sort of at Ray's expense, although we came to find out that he I don't know if he heard it. But
he contacted us and he said the two guys were just having great fun, great stuff.
Yeah. So here it is. This was a really fun one. This is our 5 stars, 5 years memory of the week.
Here's your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week on Caught Offside.
You ready to play a little game?
I can't wait.
It's called Ray Hudson Multiple Choice. What we're going to do is I'm going to play.
What a good title.
I'm going to play for you the beginning of a Ray Hudson insane comment. And then it's going to stop. And I'm going to give you multiple choice, and you have to tell me which one it is that he says next.
All right, let's do it.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right, this came from Rakitic's goal. Here we go.
Off of his left foot, but turns into an absolute.
Is it A, harpoon strike, B, howitzer, or C, heat-seeking missile?
Howitzer.
Howitzer!
Yes! Very good. He nails it on his first try.
That's because I'm a military history buff.
All right, we move on now. This comes from the immediate aftermath of James Rodriguez's equalizer. Here we go.
James arrives!
Like, is it A, a ghost out of a thick Scottish fog, B, a galloping stallion sprinting down the home stretch, or C, a gift from the heavens right in the nick of time?
From the Scottish fog.
Ghost out of a thick Scottish fog.
And he gets it again.
Magic.
Get in. I would have said he snuck in like a baby-faced assassin or just a kind of a...
Don't try to be Ray. There's only one Ray Hudson. Don't try to come up with your own
similes. Child sneaking from a creche.
He is an expert when it comes to
similes. Yeah, he's way better than me.
All right, this is after Messi. I don't even know if this was the first or the second goal, but here we go.
Doesn't matter.
Messi!
Born in a, is it A, cresting wave as it pummels the beaches that are Madrid?
B, USA.
B, crossfire hurricane and he is jumping jack flash. Or C, born in a crevice of Argentina that was blessed by God.
I'll tell you, that last one is Hudsonian, but it's not it. It's B.
Crossfire hurricane and he is jumping jack flash.
We have 3 for 3. Two more for you. I believe this is also spawned from the Messi winner.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
As cool as
A, a bomb disposal expert on the run. B, as cool as a cucumber floating in a pool of ice. Or C, as cool as Dean Martin in the back booth of a Las Vegas nightclub.
Oh, jeez. A?
The bomb disposal expert on the run.
Why on the run? Why did he feel the need to include that?
I would think that bomb disposaling is a pretty tense...
Yeah, we've all seen Hurt Locker.
Yeah, you need to be cool. Why is he running? If he's running, he's freaking everybody out, and he's not a CAM bomb disposal expert.
No, that's not...
It's going to go off! Yeah. You were supposed to dispose of it! Ah!
I got the wires confused. You're 4 for 4. This is truly impressive.
Is it really?
this to complete... What is 5 for 5? I was going to say, it's not a trifecta, it's not a, I don't know, whatever fives are.
You don't have the vocabulary of Ray.
No, only Ray Hudson could tell me.
Like 5 times of a Scouse European Cup winning thing.
This is, again, having to do with Messi.
So many decisions to make for Lionel, but he's like...
A, a lion choosing between a wildebeest and berries. B, a Microsoft mainframe making decisions at the speed of light.
Oh, Christ.
Or C, a silicon chip with legs and covered with eyes.
These are the rantings of a man you'd see at 9 o'clock on the New York subway.
Yeah.
A?
You went with a lion choosing between a wildebeest and berries.
Silicon chip with legs and covered with eyes.
What? What are you talking about?
Even he lost sight of himself, I think, in that one.
Silicon chip. With legs and covered with eyes.
I can imagine him in a straitjacket in a padded room saying these things as the doctor goes, now, Ray, with the needle, time to go to bed. What the?
Yeah, covered with eyes.
Silicon chip covered with eyes.
So 4 for 5.
What is this, Terminator 2?
You went 4 for 5. Pretty good, though, considering that all of these were insane. Now, you obviously heard the way he called the winner, right?
Alba inside. It's Messi!
Yeah.
It's on the left foot of Kroos, though.
Too far from Marcelo.
In front, one touch, we're tied. James off the bench.
spotlight. Again, the ex and big arrow man.
So I had this weird thought about Phil Shane.
Oh, God.
Phil Shane being at a bar, you know, trying to chat up a woman.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, oh, Shane! Look what he's done!
Yeah.
Like a smooth James Bond character. Oh, Ray, not again. Please.
The subtlety.
Like every great moment in Phil Shane's life being ruined.
Next one three. Touch. Messi strides. Brilliant strikes. Scores!
Phil Shane's baptism, you know, the baptism of his child. Yeah. Really somber moment. Oh, the child's head is in the water. It's been dipped.
This has been your Five Stars for 5 Years Memory of the Week.
The levels of insanity. Like the microchip
microchip
with
legs.
Chip with legs and eyes.
Covered with eyes.
Genuinely terrifying, you know?
Oh, he is a national treasure.
Ray, tell us about the dreams.
Don't ever change.
There's a silicone chip covered with eyes and legs.
He's a professional broadcast. Like, you like,
look, he's a passionate guy.
Yeah.
Who has come up with very, very contrived ways.
Who was it, by the way, that submitted that 5-star?
Oh,
do you know? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, let me have a quick look. Keep talking.
Well, at any rate, if you have a memory, because we've been celebrating 5-year anniversary of this podcast, so if you have any memory from over the past 5 years, submit it as an iTunes review. Leave your 5 stars for your 5 years memory. We will do, I can't guarantee it, because our stuff is just kind of strewn about. It's very hard to like find these things, but we will do everything in our power to go back and try to find these memories. We've gone back. This has actually been really fun going back and listening to some of these weird things that we've done from over the 5 years of the show.
Yeah, I mean, so I really some of it. Some of it we're really proud of. Some of it is
forgettable. but yeah, and you guys have been great submitting some really good ones. So we have a couple others that are in the hopper, and we're always looking for more. For sure.
How are we giving away the Pulisic jersey, by the way? We got to figure that out.
Yeah, I know. We have this beautiful Christian Pulisic jersey just sitting there collecting dust. Yeah, we do have to figure that out. A couple other things to look forward to. Obviously, we'll be back next week with another podcast where we'll take a look at more happenings in the transfer window, because it seems like as we're getting closer and closer to the end of the window, more things are going to crystallize and go down. MLS, it's another big weekend. NWSL, another big weekend there. So there is still a lot to get to, but I do want to say that we are closing in on the start of the Premier League season, and as always, we will have another one of our three-part season preview podcast series that seems like you guys have enjoyed in the past, so we're going to continue to do that again.
I think
we love doing it.
Yeah, and I think it sets people up nicely. So.
Yeah. So, hey, this was awesome, man. Our thanks to Dermot Corrigan for giving us the latest info on Gareth Bale and all the drama unfolding there in Madrid. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Oh!
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.